right. Well, we can go ahead and get started. My name is Johansson Gatewood, and I'm stepping in today for Chelsea Parsons. I'm a public health advisor supporting CDC's One Lab initiative. A couple of things about today's webinar before we dive in. If you're having any technical issues throughout, feel free to email the One Lab inbox for support at onelab@cdc.gov. Again, that is onelab@cdc.gov. We're going to post the link to the live captions in the chat, but please be sure to keep both the captions window open if you use it, in addition to this Zoom meeting. All right, so today's session is an open forum style. You will have the opportunity to come off mute and discuss an array of laboratory-related topics. This time is for you to connect with peers and discuss current and future challenges, success stories, and any relevant topics you'd like to raise in this forum. We've also have chat open for questions, comments, and further discussion. Next slide. All right, so today we will be discussing new One Lab resources, and then we'll open the floor for our One Lab open forum. And this will allow for all of our members to discuss possible laboratory training and education needs or materials. And now I'll turn it over to our One Lab network lead, Dr. Alicia Branch, to share some of our new and relevant resources. Over to you, Alicia.
Thank you, Johansson. As Johansson stated, I will discuss some of our One Lab resources. I would like to direct everyone to the One Lab Rapid Education and Capacity Building Hub, or REACH. It's a targeted and customized learning management system for laboratory professionals. You can consider it like your one-stop shop for all relevant laboratory resources as far as various formats like videos, downloadable printable job aids, and including full courses that are also include PACE credit. If you have any questions after today's session, you can always email us at OneLab, and it should be in your in the chat. As stated, this is an open format, so feel free to jump in, provide any kind of feedback you'd like to provide. However, we would like for you to really be respectful of others, their time, their questions that they may have, as well as we would like for everyone to remain muted unless you are speaking. I'm not sure if the raise your hand function is actually working. Did we test it to make sure it is working?
Yes, Alicia, it's working.
Okay, just want to make sure. Again, if you have any kind of any questions or technical issues, feel free to email us at onelab@cdc.gov. Again, that's onelab@cdc.gov. We will use today's session as an opportunity for our members to discuss experiences, challenges, success you may be facing. So again, definitely don't be shy, because if you don't provide us the information that could be useful for not just only us, but also for your colleagues that are out in the working community. So again, as I say, feel free to just raise your hand, be respectful of others. And I would like to take this time to go ahead and get started so that everybody can use this opportunity to share. And see, we already have a few questions that are coming up in the chat. I am currently using the Train CDC modules for microbiology classes. Should I change over and use the One Lab REACH website instead of Train? Is the materials the same and are different on these two sites? So I would say that not all of the courses are on Train, that are on Train are on REACH. So there may be a few as we migrate some of them over to REACH that you will still have to go ahead and use Train.
And just an additional, an add-on to that response too, and you might be wondering why the switch from train to reach, and reach is really being developed and built as a platform specifically for laboratory professionals. So we're trying to make it a hub specific to you. So rather than going to another site where there's all sorts of trainings and you know, you kind of have to search around to find one, Reach is going to be a hub specifically for the clinical laboratory environment. And we'll also be hosting an array of resources and job aids and some other cool features that'll be coming down the line. So if you don't have a Reach account, I definitely suggest checking it out and signing up.
Thank you, Chelsea. So I will open it up, you know, to allow anyone to talk about any of their training challenges that they may have faced in this past year. And I'm sure there's some out there, so feel free to raise your hand, come off mute, and discuss with your colleagues about some of your challenges.
We had a new batch of employees that we needed to do packing and shipping training. And you know, the packing and shipping is a long training, along with needing security training. And the CDC website did offer all of that. But as someone else just mentioned, I use the train. CDC train resource as well. And I think that I was eligible to use that through working for a hospital that worked with our state lab, but I don't know that they were able to sign up through that. So that was something a little, you know, we had to work through it. And then another challenge we had with that was the final quiz at the end that allows them to get their certificates is not working. And so for the last several months, if they pass the quiz at the end, they've just been print screening and emailing and requesting a certificate. So, you know, there's always some technical issues here and there.
Yes. But I'll also add that certificate that they receive at the end of that course. Now, it's just a certificate to say that they have passed that course. It is not to certify them to pack and ship. So I do want to stress that. So
yep, that's part of the training.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So if you do continue to have some issues, one of the things is that course was up for renewal, and we actually came down for a little while for us to make some updates to it, and then it was reloaded. So, and it's a fairly long course too. Does anyone else want to come off of mute and talk about some of their training challenges? And I know packing and shipping is always one of those challenges for laboratories, because typically you only have one person who's actually certified or has had the training, and then they're responsible for training other people on top of all of their other duties.
Hi, my name is Cheryl Payton. I'm from the Arizona Department of Health Services. I work in the chemistry department. Some of the training challenges that we've faced is we've lost a lot of like our chemists that have been here for a really long time. So like all of our staff is new. I mean, like less than 2 years have been in the laboratory. And it's made it really hard to train everybody. Because, you know, we have to train multiple people on each method, and just how much time it takes to train somebody. And then, like, not all the knowledge is necessarily there because they're also new. So, yeah, it's been really hard trying to get everybody kind of trained and up to speed with everything in our lab. Just having everybody being so new.
I'd like to open it up to someone else. Maybe someone else has had this a similar issue, and they have a resolution to the issue that Cheryl just spoke of.
I used to be in Arizona. I used to work at Good Sam, which I think is called something else now. So hi. At Good Sam, or I think it's Banner University Medical Center now, we had, I was a training coordinator there, and we used to make training checklists. I know everybody probably does this training checklist thing, but it was nice because we made it modular so that, you know, if there was a training that you always do for somebody in very start, like maybe safety, right? You have safety. So we had a safety training for a level one person. And then we had safety training for a level two person. So when, you know, every time you gained knowledge in their job, they moved up to another level of training checklist, which is a whole nother, you know, extra set of things to know. And so maybe just being really organized in how you're training your new people. That way you don't miss anything. Things fall through the cracks. You know, you sit next to somebody, you're learning what they're doing as they're doing it. But one tech might tell them something else, and the next training tech might assume that the first one told them something. So I highly recommend training checklists. It keeps it really organized. You know that there's nothing falling through the cracks. And it also gives your new people a sense of knowing how far along they are. You know, they see a big empty training checklist, they know they got a little ways to go, or, you know, they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But everybody kind of always has that turnover thing where there's just so much to know in a lab setting. You know, any new person is a lot of time and commitment by the employer. So I don't know. That's what I recommend.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that want to discuss any of their challenges?
So I'm seeing some stuff in the chat, Alicia, and it looks like there are questions about creating viable training for new analyzers. That has been a challenge. And training of the trainer resources for packing and shipping are some things that I'm seeing in here.
Yeah, I was going to get to I was saving the packing and shipping to later. I'll go ahead and address the one about the VR, having some of the VR information in reach. And yes, we are working on an actual VR platform to be in reach. So if we don't have anyone else who wants to come off mute to talk about any of their challenges and their lessons they've learned this year, I'll go ahead and address some of the questions about the packing and shipping. When it comes to certification, your facility or your institution, wherever you work, they're the ones who are responsible for certifying you. Typically, you only need certification in terms of regulatory if you are actually shipping a Category A substance. But the great thing is that we'll actually, if you join us next month, we'll actually have DOT who's going to come on and talk about how you actually could set up your HAZMAT program. So you would actually go, they will actually walk you through a document that they actually have, and you will learn how to actually set up your HAZMAT program. And this will be really helpful for you in terms of, you know, having that packing and shipping and creating a certification program for your actual institution. So that makes sure you're covering everything that you would need to know, everyone needs to know. So I will highly recommend that you join us for next month's OneLab Network event. So we have a question here, creating a viable training for new analyzers has been challenged. And I would like for someone who has had this, has experience with this, or have had a challenge with it as well, and they have actually have some lessons learned and things that they've actually created to remedy their actual issue. And I don't want Laura and Cheryl to be our driving force for conversation. I'm sure that there are several beyond here. If you've worked in a lab, you've ran into some of these issues. And it may not just be about, you know, the new analyzer. It could be about another piece of equipment that you actually have worked through your issue.
Hi, my name's Gretchen Anderson, and I'm up in Portland, Oregon, and work at a health system up there in their labs. I would say for creating viable training for a new analyzer, reach out to the vendor. They have, I mean, they're the experts on the analyzer. They should have something available to help guide you in creating a viable training for it.
Thank you, Gretchen. Let's see, is there anyone else who wants to talk about some of their training issues and some lessons learned before we move on?
This is Cheryl again. I was gonna jump in. Yeah, just to kind of piggyback off of what Gretchen said, all of the vendors, I mean, you can buy like training. So you can buy like application training to have somebody from the vendors come out and train you, which is kind of what we've been doing because we've lost like all of the in-house knowledge. We've just been trying. And I know not everybody probably has the money to purchase training, but at least if you could get somebody to come on site once and have them do application training, just making sure to like document everything, like take really good notes, make sure to type everything up. A lot of times they have some kind of manuals that they can give you, you know, to kind of help you get through the training. And I know we have like a very specific training we have to do to bring, you know, for analysts to get signed off. So like they have to watch somebody go through the training, then you have somebody watch you, and then you do it by yourself. So there's a lot of, I think that's part of the CLIA requirements anyway. But yeah, I'd say get an application specialist to come on site to do the vendor training.
Thank you, Cheryl.
I would share, but you shut me down.
No, I'll let you go ahead and talk since no one else is speaking up.
If you're the people that had the knowledge are gone, they might be willing to come back like a volunteer or even as a, you know, consultant just for training purposes. A lot of times people still like training. They just didn't like all the other parts of the job, or maybe, you know, they were just retirement age is what we're seeing. But so that's one thing you can do. If it's a new instrument, you absolutely have to have a manual for new instruments. So I mean, you probably already are doing this, but have your procedure written first. Don't even try to train until the person in charge of the lab actually knows what the manual says, because that'll answer a ton of questions. It's unbelievable how much you learn when you just actually read the procedure. And then, you know, obviously I said training checklist before, the same thing here. But if you don't already, definitely use that train the trainer approach somebody else mentioned. You just need one super user. You just need one person who's really good and actually knows what they're doing. And then they will facilitate training and also be the resource for the questions for your people that you're training new. So I recommend those pieces. You do have to find at least one person who knows what they're doing, you know, whether that's in the community or like she said, hiring or, you know, internally.
And sometimes you can look at the contracts and see, you know, if there's slots or seats available to send people to, you know, training. If they're not coming out to train, you know, send your staff member to the train to be that primary operator. That's another option we've had in the past. But if that primary operator, say, has left, there might be an option either send them or see if the vendor can come back for on-site training.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about we don't always want to focus on the challenges. Let's talk about some helpful resources that you've encountered or used this past year. Does anybody want to talk about some helpful resources that they've had? They've found that they've used, that they think that it would be great for other labs to know about, that they may not know about.
Hi, yeah, my name's Tyler. I think one great resource is Media Lab. Media Lab has been really integral in putting all of our SOPs into one place and also putting in training regimens. It's where we go to sign off our SOPs every year, and it's where we go to train for different topics. So that's one thing I invite other labs to take consideration into.
Does anyone else have anything?
Oh, I was just going to say, if you are interested in doing like e-learning and stuff, Articulate 360 is an awesome program that is very like engaging for learners. So that's something to look at if you have e-learning options available.
Is there anyone else who wants to share? Thank you, Tyler and Gretchen.
I'm not sure, I guess, what the different laboratories or people that are here, but I know the Association of Public Health Laboratories, APHL, offers a lot of training opportunities. I think that's some, yeah, I think Stormy in the chat just said the same thing. And then I know also instrumentation, a lot of the vendors, so like Agilent, PerkinElmer, Thermo, they put on a lot of like webinars or like conferences that people can attend, and really anybody can go to those.
I have a question that's in the chat that maybe someone could help out. Are there opportunities for mentorship for tracing laboratory personnel in growing countries like Nigeria? A lot of gaps to fill among lab personnel. Does anyone know of anything that may be useful internationally as well, or may be able to provide some type of mentorship?
This is Catherine Wangsness in Arizona, also at the state lab. And I know that some organizations have twinning programs for global partners. And so, or like basically you have like your sister laboratory that you connect with and you help each other out. And so I know that there are programs out there. I think APHL has one. I feel like some other organizations do that, and you can partner up and with a laboratory and then work with them to help them out with their training needs.
Hey, Catherine, what about like the fellowships? Are those kind of the same things?
Well, fellowships are more like, you know, people that are either recent graduates or they are, you know, going for higher level degrees. But I would say not only APHL, which we're a member lab of, but also a number of other organizations, whether it's clinical or environmental or food, a lot of these groups have fellowship opportunities or internship opportunities or things like that that would potentially, we've had a number of interns and fellows that we bring on board to teach them about like what it is that we do, show them kind of some of the things that are out there. So we find that that's definitely very helpful. And then, you know, somebody's interested, then you onboard them into a position and, you know, you're able to help kind of grow that person. I mean, so that's an opportunity, you know, for having newer people or people that are doing career changes. You know, we've had people that went off and did one thing and then decided they really wanted to do something else, and having them in a fellowship or whatever helps get them that experience they need to do that. Sorry, that was a mumble, but yes.
No, thank you. So let's talk about some helpful ways for the learners. I know that someone mentioned VR about having, you know, we're going to have the VR platform in Reach. So I know not everyone is tech savvy. So I'd like to hear like some of the helpful things that you found when you're actually doing training, since a lot of labs have had a huge turnover. You know, what have you found that really works for your learners? Whether it be, you know, the VR that you see that it's useful, or, you know, some people just kind of like the old way of just, you know, let's sit and let's walk through this, you know, take a day and we're going to work on this, you know, and it's more of a paper form.
Hi, this is Megan Crumpler from Orange County, California. I'm the laboratory director here, and I also work very closely with APHL, and thank you for those who have brought up those trainings and all the work that they do to help with workforce development. So as far as the VR training goes, you know, I really think that we're still waiting for our VR headsets to come, but as soon as they do, we plan on, you know, using them for our staff here to do some of the biosafety cabinet trainings and those. I think that we're still at the point where we can't move everything only over to VR. So I think having both, you know, maybe, you know, online PC-based training and VR trainings for certain tasks and for certain trainings will still be necessary. But what I have heard from those that have taken the VR training is that they're extremely valuable and put things like into like almost like, you know, you're working in real life as opposed to just watching some slides on a computer screen. So we're really excited about that. On our STD subcommittee under APHL, it's one of the things we're considering. We've had some requests from CDC for example, like a bench microbiologist training for things like syphilis RPR. And we're hoping that we're able to develop, you know, a virtual type of training and transition that also to expand to a VR training for that, because there is a component of actually, you know, being able to or needing to do something, you know, say tilting your cards or to read the cards of syphilis training or syphilis RPR that I think would be really beneficial. So we're working closely. I see Kathy Johnson is on here from APHL. And so we're working closely with both CDC and APHL to try to develop this type of training on a VR platform, you know, within the next year.
Great. So I'm glad to hear that you look forward for the VR. And I see that there are a couple of people in the chat found that the VR training was beneficial. Is there anyone else that want to kind of share about, you know, some of the things that they found that work for their, you know, new personnel?
I'm sorry. Hi, this is Megan again. I forgot to say, I think that the VR trainings also will help with the newer generation because they think it's cool. I mean, my kids are like, oh my gosh, you're getting VR headsets at work. I'm like, yeah, you want to come learn how to work in a BSC? So they think it's very cool, but we, you know, obviously we have multi-generational workforces and, you know, some will really appreciate working with the VR and some want a more traditional training. So I think there will be like a, you know, a transition, but I believe that this is where we are headed. So I wanted to bring that up about the new, you know, the younger generations. I think they're going to just think it's very cool or drippy or whatever, whatever the slang is right now.
The slang is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I have a VR headset and I actually had to have my son set it up for me because I had no clue how to set it up. So, yeah. And they're, you know, they're on phones and they're more techie than, you know, I'm a tech savvy kind of person when it comes to like computers and databases and those kind of things. But yeah, this was a little bit out of my league. I think someone's come off.
Oh. So this is Catherine. So I would say that I do still feel, I do agree with the multi-generational comment and things like that. And I do have to say, as much as VR sounds really cool, I cannot take VR training at all. I get super motion sick with that kind of stuff. So as cool as it sounds, I've not been able to do it. So I still have to do things the old fashioned way, but so we do have some people that where we're more likely to still be doing more I wouldn't call it paper, but definitely more like the video or even PowerPoint reading and things like that. I have heard from some people, even some of the younger staff. They like the mix of being able to do some stuff on their own, but certain topics, they definitely want more of that hands-on where somebody's sitting with them and talking it through and explaining it. So I think sometimes, yeah, the more traditional kind of training that people are used to, I think they... And I don't know if it's just that right now, because we've been so virtual the last 3 years, that people are kind of missing those connections and they want a little more like that FaceTime. But I mean, they definitely like the video training. I know there's been a lot of buzz about the VR. So I think that's very helpful. I just wanted to bring up the motion sick thing though, because I cannot watch I can't play video games, I can't watch point of view movies, and I can't do VR because otherwise I'm sick. So it's so cool and so great, but I need the more just make it a little more stable for me.
Yeah, I understand completely. I've actually sat down and used it, so. So you would say that there should be a healthy balance between the two, like.
Yes.
I agree with her that hands-on is super, super important. We have a lot of staff now that seem to have come from med tech programs that were online, and there's just a huge difference in the knowledge of the people who had online med tech programs versus, you know, in a hospital or in a lab doing wet work. Even though I know a lot of like identifications in microbiology, now we're all Molotov, you just need to throw it on an instrument, it still helps to know what you're doing. And so I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of the people in the lab, they just like hands-on science. Like that's what drew them to this field. And so although everybody in our area uses online training for sure, I feel like nobody feels like they really know it until they get it in their hands and do it. So I think that hands-on piece is incredibly important. I haven't had any VR experience working with VR, but I feel like that's awesome. Like I'm excited to see that because that hands-on piece is super, super important.
Megan.
Hi, yeah, me again. You'll have to shut me up. Yeah.
No, it's fine.
I completely agree with you about the hands-on training because I think that it's critical. The VR or any type of virtual training where it does fill a gap is it meets some of our DEI initiatives. And so where the requests have actually come for say, you know, like I was talking about the syphilis our PR training is actually from our global health partners, because they don't have anybody to come and train them how to do our PR on the bench. And so, you know, they feel like this would be very valuable in some places that are resource poor, to be able to have this training available to them. Another one that we're going to focus on related to STDs again is dark field. And in the US, there's only one training entity in the entire US for syphilis dark fields. And I know it's a dying art that isn't done, but you know, we still do it here in our lab, and our STD controller finds it very valuable. And so that's, you know, and that's also a request from our global health partners. Is for dark field training, and for the same reason, they don't have anyone to train them. And so this is better than nothing, you know, if you cannot get that live bench training.
Great. So do we have someone else that wants to share?
Someone with a baby is not muted.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you wanted to come off mute and say something.
I wanted to just add something. So somebody in the chat had put making sure their SOPs have lots of detailed pictures. I know that's something that we've had to work on, just because like the previous generation of chemists had worked here for like 20 years. So like a lot of what they were doing was in their head and not necessarily like on paper.
Yeah.
And so we've definitely been having to update all of our SOPs with a lot more information, so that, you know, if we do continue to have a lot of turnover, at least everything is actually documented in the SOP, and then people can follow that instead of just kind of trying to fumble through it.
Yeah, so if it's not written, it didn't occur, so.
Yeah. But yeah, and I mean, we've definitely been putting a lot more pictures, like, screenshots of like the software, so that like it's easier for people to kind of find things even within the software.
Yeah, SOPs are a big one. And keeping them up to date when you have so much to do and other things to do in the lab.
Yeah, I feel like we, like during the pandemic, because people were home telecommuting, we did update a lot of our SOPs, but there still wasn't enough detail in them. So yeah, now we're having to add even more detail.
Does anyone have any plans for some new training, education for any of their teams?
You know, like I mentioned, we use Molditoff, and that's all people know nowadays, newer people, but we found a need for whenever that instrument's down, you know, we need to do something. And so we revisited the CLSI guideline, darn it, I think it's M35, don't quote me, but it's called abbreviated identification methods. And, you know, it's literally like three or four biochems that all take 2 hours or less to fully ID the most common pathogens. I'm talking about microbiology. Resources like that, we're digging back into, and we definitely plan on doing some of that kind of training this year, just as backup for when our instrumentation is down.
Does anyone else have any, you know, training that, or education, or anticipated training and education for their teams?
I know I keep talking, but
no, it's fine. No. I think it's still good, because you know, everyone gets an opportunity to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so I know working in a laboratory, we're always focused on like the methods, the instrument and stuff. But recently I decided I'm going to start making some other training mandatory, like mental health training. I know Catherine Wingsmith is actually my boss. But I think we're both also really into like doing the, predictive index? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the predictive index is like a personality profile. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to do that and kind of see how, maybe if you're having issues with like your manager or your staff, to see how you guys could better communicate. So kind of doing more training that's not just focused on the laboratory.
And I'm going to hop on after Cheryl. See, okay. I have wonderful staff. But, you know, I completely agree with that because, you know, it's like we've actually talked about grant training for some of the newer staff. I mean, we are so grant dependent, but we don't really push that training out to a lot of staff. And one of the other things that I was really thinking about is I also oversee, or I used to oversee our quality assurance unit, and I actually oversee our laboratory licensing units. And they don't necessarily need to know, they don't need training on how to run the instrumentation and stuff. They need training on how to do the review, you know, how to make sure that they're doing the internal audits or the external audits, or, you know, how to communicate. And communicate is like such a generic word, but like, how do you interview people? You know, how do you interview people so that you can get the answers you need? How do you, you know, what do you do when people are confrontational? And you know, a lot of those trainings are very important also, you know, to make sure that you are able to, you know, be respectful, but at the same time, get the information that you need to do your job. So I really think there are levels of training needs. And, you know, and as you get higher up in the management chain, you're not necessarily on the bench anymore. And one of the things that I've really been thinking about is I need like, you know, quick trainings on the new technologies so I know what people are talking about sometimes. So some, you know, but you want to use your resources to send your bench staff who are actually going to be doing training or pay for them to do the training. So I'll be quiet now too.
No.
Somebody else has their hand up.
Monica.
Yeah, this is Monica Akri calling, and I am from J. Michael Consulting, and I love where the discussion is going as far as using the laboratory structure and know-how of trainings and writing SOPs and kind of using that in other areas like mental health. I just recently proposed a poster to the APHL conference about the BMBL risk reduction program for preventing laboratory acquired burnout, which is a made up disease, but it's we can say it's real.
No, say it's real.
Yeah. And I just wanted to give a shout out and also encourage people to capture in SOPs the things they don't think they need to or should write down, especially for onboarding. For example, LIMS SOPs and using work aids for use of the LIMS for maybe those strange samples that come in and it's like you do have to put a comment in, but it's something that you only have to do once every 3 months or year. And so, you kind of have to rack your brain about how to do it, have those available for people so that it's really easy. We're lab folks. We know how to create these resources and we can use them.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, burnout does exist. So we'll start wrapping things up. Yes, I heard someone.
It's Tyler again.
No, it's fine, Tyler.
I just wanted to chime in and say that yes, burnout exists. I have it. That's why I'm currently transitioning to public health. And although I'm still going to be working closely with the lab, one thing that I wish that came from the SOPs was this trajectory of growth. And I feel that should be something that should go into some training. What are some things that you can do with a laboratory background? What are the things that management really needs in a laboratory? When you're at the bench, you're doing the grunt work, you have short staffing issues. There's not a lot of time or effort, like from all accounts, from management, from staff, to try and get these things accomplished. So I wish that more labs would spend time on these growth opportunities, taking informatics class, applying laboratory to mental illness. So these kinds of things. I think we should branch out.
So could I get someone to speak that's in a leadership position to address some of Tyler's points that he made? Since you are sitting in a leadership position, I know someone just spoke about, you know, they're no longer at the bench. So, but, you know, it actually has its own different, you know, responsibilities. But you also feel like even though you're not at the bench anymore, you need to have a better understanding what your staff is doing, because since our technology has changed and it continues to change. So I think that, could I get some, you know, anybody to kind of just discuss, you know, talk about it. Megan, go ahead.
Hi, this is Megan. Again, following an assessment we had in the lab pre-pandemic, it was a lean assessment. Actually, Catherine and Kathy were on site. One of the things that came out of that was each department in our lab has a daily huddle meeting. And as a laboratory director and a leader in the lab, I try to attend those as much as I can. You know, it's some of them are at the same times. And so I don't get to everyone every day. I definitely don't need to do that. But oftentimes when I do go to those huddles, you know, one, it's a presence of the director with it, you know, in the lab with my staff and talking with them in a very informal setting. And it allows me to kind of see some of like those intricacy, you know, things that are happening within the department that I may not, you know, be aware of if I wasn't out in the lab. And you know, there are many, many valuable things that have come out of our daily huddles, and my staff absolutely still love them 5 years later. But it's just a very short, quick 10 minutes, you know, you can pop in, say hello, this is what's going on. I can offer suggestions, or oftentimes I'm like, oh, why are we doing that? Oh, we can use this, you know, because I know, you know, kind of the umbrella of things that are going on in the lab. And I'm like, oh, this department is doing this, you should talk to them. And so I think that it really helps. So both my assistant lab director and myself, you know, we kind of tag team and try to go to those, you know, throughout the week.
Great. Does anybody else have anything that they would like to share?
This is Monica Akri again, and I think that the movement towards performance-based assessments for competencies that BSL-3 training has developed, and the CDC described, I believe, some other trainings as well that have a rubric at the base of the document to, you know, at the beginning, you're a beginner, you just have and so you can see your growth through those areas. And then it would be a natural progression for that document to describe where you can get further proficiency. So I think if we move towards performance-based assessments, that would be a natural process.
Yes, that's great. Tyler, so I hope you've had your notebook ready and your pen and jotted down all these great ideas.
That was gold. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'll start kind of wrapping things up and end with like talking about a little bit about health equity and workplace concerns about diversity and inclusion. So anybody have any like encountered any needs? You've encountered issues? You know, since staff is, you know, in the last 3 years has changed, you've had this, you know, the turnover rate. Are you, you know, facing any of those challenges with health equity or with workplace diversity and inclusion? So no one has encountered that or would like to just kind of speak about it if you have, you know, a passion about it or some concerns or, you know, issues.
So Tyler again.
It's fine.
Our labs are in New Jersey and we don't have a dedicated licensure program like New York does. So our lab has this requirement, needs to be ASCP certified, but we've begun to relax that position as we're having staffing challenges. But it has introduced a lot more people from different backgrounds, ones from forensic backgrounds, from higher conglomerate labs. And I gotta say the training isn't always there and it's been a big gap trying to get them up to speed in our fast-paced lab. So those are the problems we have. A lot more people from different backgrounds are coming in, and that's amazing, getting different perspectives. At the same time, they're not, they don't have the same experience as someone coming fresh out of medical technology school or any kind of other training program.
Thanks, Tyler. Does anyone else have anything they would like to share?
I agree with Tyler. We have people in our lab now that are not med tech trained, and we are definitely having to deal with those gaps. And it's not simple because the gaps are not all the same. You know, if you have somebody with just a general bio background and they're working in micro, they have a lot covered already. You just have to cover, you know, just the micro piece. But if you have somebody coming from environmental, you know, science into the micro lab, there's a lot more to cover about pathogens and, you know, normal flora. So I agree with him. The diversity I'm seeing is in people's training.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Really appreciate everyone joining today and providing their feedback. It was, you know, a great discussion, and I hope everybody was able to at least gather one or two things from today's session. I would like to highlight our upcoming One Lab Network event. It's going to occur on February 27th at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, and it will be with the U.S. Department of Transportation. And again, they're going to discuss how to implement a hazmat program. This will be really helpful for those who have the questions about the packing and shipping certification or your institution creating a program. So I encourage everyone that's on this call who had those questions and those who don't have the questions, but you just kind of need to make sure that you do have a hazmat program that is very useful for your team. And since a lot of you have had a huge turnover rate in the last couple of years. I think the invite and registration would be coming soon. We typically would have it in the actual link, but today we do not. So look, I encourage you to look for that in the next coming weeks. And again, I like to remind you that for the presentation for today will take probably about 2 weeks before it's loaded on OneLab. So you could go to www.cdc.gov/OneLab. Again, that's please give us at least 2 weeks to upload everything. Sometimes it may take a little bit longer. You know, everybody understands about technology. So again, I encourage you to look for the email for next month's event. It's February 27th. And I also like to tie in there that we will be also hosting a train the trainer for packing and shipping in April. And we could actually provide that more information about that in next week and next month's OneLab network event. Again, I would like to say again, thank you all for being engaged, and I look forward to seeing you next month in our next OneLab network event.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you. This was awesome.